Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome. This is Angela Colter bringing you this episode of Living the Shift. And today we have an awesome soul sister of mine. I love all these awesome guests that are coming on, but Debbie Weinstein of angelicreator.com. So say good morning, Debbie.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Good. And so much things we were talking about right before we get on the air. There's so much changing every day, so much more clarity and understanding every day. And I just keep on telling everyone, as I tell myself, by the way, even when we can't see it, it'll come together. Just as we step back and zoom out, it becomes more and more clear about what's in every moment. So this week, very, very, very important topic that's very often overlooked, especially by people who are doing this kind of work. But it's not even just those people who are doing spiritual practitioner work, but it's like people who are in service industries tend to shift away from this. And so it's some part of this whole background of sacrificing ourselves for others and all kind of stuff that we're getting rid of. But the title self-centralness and its importance on your spiritual journey came from, you know, it's funny because people hear self-centered and they believe it to be a negative thing, but actually it really is core in terms of doing this work. So self-centralness is really, I thought the word when it came to me was very indicative of how it benefits us most to work from the source of the center of who we are and what's important to cultivate in that. So Debbie, why don't you go ahead and start with that, because I know you love talking about that topic too.
I do, and I think that I probably would say the topic of holding the space for others has come up a lot lately. And I find that, like, on our journey, when we're really concentrating on taking care of ourselves too and recognizing the things that that are not on our highest and best journey, that's one of the tools that I use to keep myself centered as well.
Holding your own space?
Holding my own space, exactly. Yeah. Becoming conscious of what's going on in the moment, mm-hmm. and recognizing it, and then just being in that center, if that makes any sense.
Oh, totally. Totally, because when we are... And that's why I love the centralness, because it does make me feel like, you know, centered and core, right? And I was like, oh, that's a great word. We need to start using that.
I agree.
But it's like, because, you know, as I tell people over and over, and I was on somebody else's show last week, and we got into discussion about this, and they had asked me what was one of the biggest things, you know, that, you know, takeaway that I would recommend. And it was funny, because I think it was even before this came up with you and me as to deciding what the topic was. And I said, you know, things are speeding up and they're so accelerated and we have so much going on, we tend to so easily fall into the habit of taking care of everybody else around us, taking care of everything else around us, and leaving ourselves for last, especially those of us who are doing work with others to help them, you know, get into the place of their own centeredness, right? So, and I said, you know, what comes to me always when I talk to people about this is, you know, even though culturally, belief system-wise, you know, we have cultivated over this whole separation duality existence how, you know, important it is to, you know, that it's important to sacrifice yourself for others, that is, you know, that it determines your value and worthiness. And this is so embedded in us that it's something we're unraveling and realizing, wait a second, no, it's like when you're in an airplane, right? And they tell you, you know, if the oxygen mask comes down, put it on yourself first if we're helping the person next to you. Well, that's just total sense, because if the well runs dry, then there's nothing left in the well, right?
Exactly. And the well can mean a lot of things too, from physical self-care, like drinking water.
Right.
And remember,
amen, to
take Opa. That's important to recognize our body's way of telling us that we need more self-care. So recognizing and tuning into our body and not just being so busy with busyness that we're not really connecting not only with, you know, everything around us, but in our own human body.
Well, right. And also, our bodies are shifting and changing too physically. And, to, you know, as we shift vibrationally, our bodies are changing, you know, from that organic carbon-based form to the crystalline form. And this is like really unknown for us. We've never, this is like the one time we're doing this, which means our bodies are really important to honor. They are our temples, right? And yeah. And by the way, what it always comes down to is listening to your inner guidance. If you're being guided to do something, even if it's not what they call standard, you know, practice and all that kind of stuff, and it makes you feel good and comforted and embraced and centered, then that's important to follow, right?
It's true. It's true. And that's also like even visualizing. I see like my 12 strands of DNA, you know, all connected and whatnot as well, because we are changing. At the speed of light, it just is incredible. So, yeah, taking care of those things, you know, take that Epsom salt nap. Take that time to just, you know, well, you know what I'm going to say. I'm always connected to art. And I recently saw a friend who came in from out of town, and she handled her stress by doing Zentangle. And she actually gave me a couple little gifts of things she made, if I can find my... But it's doodling.
Mm-hmm.
Doodling, but in a mindful way. So you can... It's like a form of meditation in that sense.
Right.
And also things that nurture your soul, things that feed your soul. Now, I have... certain friends that we love to feed our soul. So we will find venues or art things going on, or, you know, when your soul is crying out for a little food for the soul, go to a sculpture garden, go outside, be in nature, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a big proponent of that. And most recently, it's funny because I've been guided in a number of sessions, and I found out this is the largest growing trend on Amazon, adult coloring books.
Yeah.
Especially don't
the mandala ones too, right? Mandala coloring books. I see those, which is awesome.
Yep. And you know, just that's another form of meditation. It's a form of self-care. It's going back to what you love. You know, if you don't, it's an expression. It's a way of expressing. You know.
Right.
And
yeah.
Well,
you know, it's funny. Just this morning, before I even got on, I was like just doing my morning scan of Facebook and stuff. And there's a group I belong to. It's like a spiritual entrepreneur group. And somebody had written something about how they had yesterday decided they to take a nap in the middle of the afternoon, and how like they had to overcome the guilt of feeling lazy because they took a nap and all this kind of stuff. And I wrote a whole paragraph in there. I said, you know what? I love my afternoon naps. And by the way, even on days when I am chock full and I am like in my office all day, if I have 30 minutes in between sessions where I have some space in between clients, I'll lay down on the futon in my office and have a nap in there. But you know, I found that when I do that, I actually am more energized and actually can work better and more clearly and more focused for the rest of the day.
Well, Andrew, a friend of mine's child just got hired at a place, and their office has a napping room.
Oh, awesome!
Every employee gets 15 minutes in that napping room at any point.
That's awesome. I love that.
Isn't that amazing?
Yep. And now
you become more productive, because mm-hmm. when you listen to your body, and if you, you know, and it's those little quick little cat naps, that just replenish your energy, you know?
And energetically, by the way, for anybody who, you know, this is a little outside the box, but when you lay down, say, you could lay down for 30 minutes with the intention of that in the 30 minutes that you're napping, get the equivalent of, say, an hour's nap or 2 hours of sleep, or just that I will be completely revitalized and replenished in the 25 yeah. minutes or 30 minutes that I'm napping.
Yeah, exactly. Setting those intentions right before you close your eyes really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so easy. And it's like, oh, really? I mean, you can do it in a 15. I've done it. I have literally done it in a 15-minute cat nap and said, okay, 15 minutes. I'm putting my head down, closing my eyes, and it's going to be the equivalent of like a full hour nap or a full 2 hour nap, and I'm going to be completely revitalized. And guess what? I am. And when I wake up, it's like 15, 20 minutes later, and I'm like, oh my God, because, you know, you feel that energetic shift that you're, like, a lot more rested, and then you're like, oh my God, was it more? And it's like, no, that was only 15 or 20 minutes. Yay! And it is honoring the rhythm of your own body. And
right.
Especially right now, it is so, so, so important, more than anything else, is really focusing on this self-care because of our body shifting. And, oh, by the way, you might want to eat certain kinds of foods and not certain kinds of foods in a way that you've never done it before. And I'm not talking about following any diet. I'm just saying because all of a sudden you're not going to want to eat this, or you will want to eat this. And you might just say, okay, well, you know, ask your guidance. Is this for my highest and best? If you get yes, well, okay. If it nourishes your soul, then let it nourish your soul.
Exactly. So I agree with that.
Yeah, and you know what I find is that so what happens is I talk to so many people, you know, we all have this spiritual, those of us who work in this, we have a spiritual community and we all talk to each other. And I hear, and I see clients who do this work, who come to see me for sessions too. And it's like, oh, they exhaust themselves. And a lot of times it's like, oh, I'm working and helping so many other people and they're doing really well and I'm helping them, you know, step into their own power. And yet they're falling apart because they're leaving themselves for last. And that's, and like you were saying about going into nature and nurturing your soul, is like one of the first things I ask them is, what makes you thrilled and happy and completely at peace? And are you doing that all the time in a way that, you know, helps to nourish you, right?
Yep. And it's funny too, even just getting up and for years when I first was connected in with the whole angelic realm, I was guided for forever to just wake up and say, let me shine. And you know, that was my little mantra for, you know, it's just let me just be a beacon of light to others. And I, you know, that was like, I can't even count how many years ago that was. And that has a lot to do with your self-care too. It's just keeping yourself feeling bright and expanded as well.
Yeah. And we have a comment from Sandy. My husband's old workplace had a nap room too. It was even in corporate America. Not too many people used it though. Too much work to do. Lol.
Funny.
Yeah. But you know, it is really, oh, I just totally lost my train of thought. What was the last thing you said?
We were talking about brightening up and then saying,
the let it shine. Because then, you know, that song from Frozen, Let It Go, came into my head about let it shine, let it shine. And I'm like, okay, stop. I'm not going to sing. But, yeah, and actually it's funny because, I always come back to, you know, are you clearing your mind? Are you doing some self-focused time? Are you doing some sort of, you know, meditation? And really all meditation is a way to clear the chatter in our mind so we can come back to our self-centralness. And that doesn't have to be, you know, the lotus position on a mountain or whatever, although that's beautiful, and I do love that. But, you know, it is sometimes just sitting out in nature. Sometimes, and I tell people, well, what about when you, like you were saying, when you woke up in the morning and you would just set the intention to let me shine, right? Sometimes, I mean, literally, you can do a 5 or 10 minute meditation in bed before you even get out that pretty much sets your day, sets your energy, clears you out, you know, and turns up your light, and then you become the lighthouse. And then you don't have to do anything to help other people. You just simply shine.
Exactly. That's huge. On our journey right now.
It is. And, you know, and that's what I always, you know, and it's true, is I come back to this topic a lot because people will, you know, when they start to awaken, they start to learn how to, you know, do energy work or work outside of space and time and change and manipulate their reality, you know, for its highest and best and all that kind of stuff. Then, like, one of the first egoic questions that we get, because this is just what we've been trained, right, is, what we've been trained to do is, oh, how can I help so-and-so? How can I help my spouse? How can I help my kids? How can I help my parents? How can I help my friends, right? And I always say, by helping yourself. Mm-hmm. No. Well, how do I help? No. By helping yourself.
It's hard to get your head around that concept.
I know. And it's interesting because I always explain that. Because here's the thing. The more you clear yourself out, the higher vibration you hold, and the higher vibration you hold, the more of a lighthouse you become. The more of a lighthouse you become and emanate your light, the more others around you naturally want to raise theirs. So they're just by being you and shining your light, you are helping other people, and you don't have to do anything else, which is awesome, right? Effortless.
Exactly, which is why I think when they say, if we taught every kid to meditate and we were all doing our own work, then the world would be a completely different place.
I know. And for those who, interestingly, I don't know, for anybody watching this who doesn't know, has not seen this, the study they did. Did you see the study they did in Washington, D.C. with transcendental meditation?
Yes, I did see that.
Yeah, and so for anybody who doesn't know, I mean, this is an awesome example of how meditation actually makes a huge difference in our lives and in how we interact with each other and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, they did this study in the theory. Actually, I think they set out to disprove it, and it ended up proving it, right? So they said, okay, well, let's take a bunch of people, because the whole theory was, well, if a bunch of us meditated at the same time, then it would actually help not just us, but, like, say, bad areas and where there's a lot of crime and all that kind of stuff. So they went to this park that was in this crime-ridden part of Washington, D.C., and they had a number of people. And I think it was several hundred people, if I remember correctly. And it was, like, once a week, they would sit in this park for an hour and do meditation, mindful meditation together, and that's all they did. And they watched the crime numbers in that area to see if anything different, anything changed. And over, I think it was over a couple of months, if I remember correctly, but over the period of time of the study, they did notice a very marked difference in the crime rate, and the crime rate went down over that period, and that was just like 1 hour a week for a period of time, and it's like, wow. Look at the difference that can make, and that's only like, say, 100 people or whatever. Could you imagine if we all did it?
Yep. And when you tap more into your joy than your fear, then that's what you're emanating. You know, you're bringing that out.
Right. And so, you know, I always joke around and say, yeah, you know what? Screw all this other stuff in politics. I'm going to run for president. And my only platform is going to be everybody's going to be required to have an hour of meditation together a day.
It would change the world.
It would change the world, and that's all it would take, which is so amazing, and yet we still haven't done that yet. But you're right, and so they've done these studies about where they have implemented, say, meditation into classrooms and how much it has changed children's behavior, especially those who were, say, what they call ADHD and hard to focus and, you know, and the little...
It's funny because you're just sparking a memory. In high school, I remember in English class, this was so unprecedented. I had a teacher who was into meditation, and I remember it was one class, he did it one time, and it changed the way I fell asleep every night, because I, at the time, was having a hard time falling asleep. But he took us through this guided meditation of connecting with your body parts, one at a time, right side, left side. All the way up the body, and you completely relax them. I had never experienced anything like that.
Yeah.
And I remember how it completely changed my reality, because I knew that if I did that, I'd be able to go quality. So I was able to interact and be able to, you know, get myself to sleep. But I did it for so long, and it was one little class I learned, you know?
Yeah, I know. And it's really funny because I have, you know, on my website, I actually have a couple of free downloads people can do, your guided meditations or whatever. And the one that is like a 5 or 6 minute meditation, I've had so many people tell me, oh my God, that has changed everything.
And I love that meditation.
Oh, well, thank you. Oh, that's right. Yeah, you were one of the ones that said to me
about that. I have clients who love that meditation.
But it's like less than 10 minutes, right?
Less than 10 minutes, and it just... Anybody who has heard that meditation, because I do a spiritual discussion group and I'll do home parties, and a lot of times I will use that meditation as I'm connecting with other people, and they say, I never knew meditation could be like this. They thought, I don't know what they thought, but it's simple, and their minds don't wander, and they're able to just go expand out and then come back in, and it's a life changer for them. So it's a simple little thing like that.
I know, and I think part of what people talk themselves out of it is because they think, oh, it's going to be too hard, I'm going to be too distracted, it's going to take too long, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, no, no, here we go, in less than 10 minutes.
Well, they think yoga, too, that they have to sit with their legs up. And
right. It's like, no, however you're comfortable. If you're comfortable sitting where you are, then sit where you are, you know. And it does come back to that, because that's how we stay self-central, is we stay down to our core and we stay energetically central to being the light that we are. And I truly, it's amazing how simple that is, and yet so overlooked, right? And let's talk about that for a little bit. You know, I sort of glossed over that because, you know, and I know plenty of people like this too, is the whole, well, you know, oh, well, I helped all these people, I helped this person, I helped that person, and then they have all these like really bad chronic things, or they're taking stuff on, you know, for other people, right? Mm-hmm. And then they're calling victimhood to being empathic, right? And when people say that to me, I laugh and go, oh, well, you know, speaking to the choir, but you can change that, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. I had physical things that went on that, yeah.
Yeah, you had some major ones earlier on, right?
Yeah. But see, to me, that was, I mean, my understanding now going through it, I didn't see the clarity as much, but as I started healing, I recognized what was going on, and it was a spiritual, you know, reawakening for me.
Right, it's like the hindsight 2020
thing, right? Exactly. But again, our body's going to tell us things in physical form. Okay, I know if I get a certain rash, I have to look, okay, and I know it sounds really corny, but somebody's getting under my skin. But it's always been my way of recognizing that. So if I see that, I go into myself. That's my personal sign. And I'm like, okay, who's getting under my skin? And inevitably, it immediately pops in. I'm like, okay, I get it. So I'm doing my own work or my own, you know, recognition.
Right.
Of that.
Well, and you can eventually change that altogether too, right? You know, we choose our own signals. And it's funny because I talk about that. You know, we talk about that a lot in terms of this whole community, is everything in the physical comes from the non-physical. So, I mean, that's what whole energy work is all about, is realizing that everything we manifest, whether it's in our physical bodies, whether it's in our environment, you know, or in our emotions, our mental state and all that kind of stuff, it all comes from the non-physical. So all our physical bodies are, when they develop or manifest a disease or illness or irritation, allergies, intolerances, anything like that, it's always a message to look at, like what you were saying, which is a great topic to introduce, which is, so what is that showing me? And we don't realize, and when I talk to people about this, they don't realize how literal we are, right? Like a rash, who's getting under my skin?
Yeah.
And same thing with allergies, is why am I irritated? Why is this particular thing irritating me? You know, there are things like
talk about allergies. I had an EpiPen type of allergy, an anaphylactic allergy to a lot of fresh fruit, apples, and you know, and all these things. And that, you know, number a couple of years ago, that released.
I remember that, because wasn't it when you were here? Even if it's not in my physical body. So if I know, And that's the funny thing. So, yeah, I did a bunch of releasing, but the shifting got to a point of really sickness is outside of my reality. However, if I do, I've gotten to the point where it is so sensitive that if I do ignore a message, say, I don't know, 4 or 5 times, the higher self says, okay, fine, now I know how to put the neon sign on because you're going to get so shocked at having anything in your physical body that you're going to be like, huh. And then immediately it stops me dead in my tracks because I know that I have already said, all right, I'll pay attention to the stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when it does that, it affects my body, it's like, all right, I deserve that.
It takes some attention, and it's doing what it's supposed to do. It's getting the attention to, you know, where your focus has to go, which, you know.
Right, and the whole, you know, the biggest, that's what it goes back to, that self-centralness and making sure that we do the best that we can to make ourselves the best that we can be, and that's really our job, is to be the light, right?
Right. Even if it means just laughing or finding, you know, humor in things, because we take things so seriously,
yeah,
so often that we have to, you know, like it's fun to lighten up. Then you're making a lighter, you know. The angels take themselves lightly, you know, have a laugh.
Right. Well, and by the way, we raise our own vibration by laughing. There's all that stuff about laughter being good medicine. And, you know, one time I had, when I was doing the open discussion group by me, I had somebody ask, well, what do you mean by raising your vibration? What do you mean? And I'm like, okay, how do you feel when you laugh? And she's like, what do you mean? I said, well, how do you feel when you laugh? And she goes, well, I feel good. And I'm like, right. Your body relaxes, right? You open up energetically, and you feel good. That's raising your vibration. That's like letting go of the stuff you're holding on to that's closing you down. That is being in our natural state of love, and the more we do that, the better it is, which is why, you know, I always say, I believe completely that the path to remembering our enlightenment, not attaining it, but remembering it, is really just peeling away all the layers that are preventing us from living in that love and laughter and joy all the time. So the more we laugh and play, the better it's going to get. And you and I know that completely.
It's all in how you live the journey and have fun along the way.
Right. And so, you know, I literally will put in my journal in the morning. I remember I did this one day, and I thought this was so funny. And I still do this, is like I write down what I have gratitude for. Like, and even if it's like 2 or 3 things, I'll find, you know, something I have gratitude for. And we can use that as part of affirmation and setting the vibration of what we create in our existence and stuff. But I remember one day, or the first time I wrote this down, where I wrote, I am so blessed and grateful to have... To be able to laugh until I cry, you know, it's so many instances in every day of my experience. So I wrote that down, you know, I did my meditation, and I went to my office and I was doing sessions, and it was like 4 hours later, I'm in a session with a client, and she said something that was so, it just hit us both so weird. And then we sat there and we could even talk for like 5 minutes because we were laughing so hard, we were crying, and I thought back, oh, isn't that funny? I just wrote that down.
Funny.
And
better than crying. I mean, the emotion is just lifting you up.
Right. Right. And that is self-care, which is going back to what we started with, is the simplicity of look at what honors your soul, look at what brings you joy, and right. Do it. You know,
yep.
If you love to go walk in nature, if you like to go on a hike, if you like to sit by water and go on a boat, then do it. If you like to look at art, if you like to sing a song or dance, and it doesn't matter if anybody's watching or if you do it in the middle of a crowded street, just do it. And then, because what I love is when somebody does it, and I love a lot of things on social media now, they'll show people just like there was this one of a lady standing at a bus stop, and she has her earphones in, and she's like, she starts literally doing this dance, and it was just so funny and awesome to watch her, because it doesn't matter whether anybody would term it as good or not, because it was good, because it came from her heart.
Right. Well, it's reminding me of karaoke, because my kids do go to karaoke a lot. But
yeah.
Classic, right?
Yeah.
Getting up there, doesn't matter if you have a good voice, bad voice, you're having fun.
Yeah, as long as you're having fun. And that is, and you know, we so minimize that, and we have traditionally minimized that, but it is so important in our self-centralness, because whenever, you know, it's funny, there was a woman who I knew when I was in corporate, which I left in 2006, and I hadn't seen her for like 5 years. She called me up. She wanted to do lunch. We went to lunch, sat down, and I said, so how's it going? And she starts talking about how she just went through a bout with cancer. She had all this stress in her life, you know, and it was all like stomach, which was, you know, in her solar plexus and her own power. And it had been so, like, she kept on getting closed down, and she kept on having to take care of everybody else. And all the decisions she had to make had to take care of everybody else in her life. And it was, you know, piling on and piling on, piling on. And finally, I just looked at her and I said, so what brings you joy? And she stopped for a minute. She goes, I have no idea. And, you know, it's funny because some people say that's sad, but there are a lot of people who don't know that answer. Because we have driven so much into ourselves about, you know, what's honorable, what makes you worthy, and we work ourselves to the bone to sacrifice ourselves so that others can be happy, and then we forget about our own happiness. And I see that a lot in our generation because of what we were taught about, like, you know, bringing up family and all that kind of stuff, and it's still like all this shifting. And there are so many people, and men especially, funny enough, men especially. And there are men that have come into my office, and I stop, and then usually that's where we start. Is what brings you joy?
That's a great question.
Yeah. And what I always say as my little thing behind it is, and it has to be something that is not dependent on anybody else. So not my family, not my spouse, not my kids, right? So what brings you joy if you were on a desert island all by yourself and you could do anything that would make you happy? What would it be? Because when people figure that out, then they were able to, this woman, when she figured it out, and she goes, well, I used to do this. So it was like a hobby she used to do. Quilting. She goes, and I really used to like doing that. And I'm like, okay. And I'm not saying you have to do it as what you do for a living, although many end up doing that once they find their passion in it. But she, so I said, well, so start to, why aren't you quilting? Well, I haven't had time, Well, you know, it was really funny. That was the only interaction we had, although we're friends on Facebook. And I was watching, and like several months later, I saw her posting pictures of she went to a quilting convention. And then I noticed that, you know, she had changed jobs. And then I, you know, and it's funny because, and looking at pictures of her and, like, you know, over a progression of probably a year, year and a half, it showed a huge difference. And it was that one thing.
One simple thing. Just something that sparked her joy to allow herself the time to do that for herself.
Right. And that's really important in our self-centralness, too, because we are central to ourselves. We are here to take care of ourselves, to be the brightest light that we can, and to do that, of course, we want to find our joy.
Yes, it's self-love.
Right.
It's self-love. It's loving ourselves enough to give ourselves as much attention as we do to everybody, for everybody else.
Yeah, and one of the areas where we do lose that is the whole parenting thing, right? Because so many times, especially women, I find, they're always in that place. Funny, because men, a lot of times, it's their spouse and their kids, right, that they want to make happy. And with women, a lot of times, it's not that they don't want to make their husband happy, but a lot of times, the first thing they'll say is my kids, right? And because we've been taught that that's what makes you a good mother, right? That is that you're supposed to sacrifice yourself, right? You're supposed to, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so we're unraveling. And what I say to people who are women who come to me and we have this discussion, because then they have this underlying anger that grows, right, or underlying resentment that grows because they're putting everybody else first because they feel like they have to because that's what's going to prove them to be worthy, and yet they become more and more angry and despondent, and then, oh, guess what? Here's our message board, they start to get sick and they have constant sickness or they have something chronic. And it's like, well, if you continue to do this, and it's not that we're not supposed to love our kids. Of course we love our kids, but if we come to loving others from a place of loving ourselves first, it actually becomes a much purer love and a much more
it's overflowing.
Right.
It's overflowing. It's like I see that image a lot when I'm working with clients. I'll see this vessel, and if it's empty, you can't pour from an empty vessel. You have to fill yourself up first, and whatever is flowing out is for others. But you need your base, your fill, until you can overflow.
Right. And by the way, what I also tell tell them is this. Think of it as you are the role model for your children. And if you allow yourself to find your own happiness, then guess what? You're teaching them.
Actions speak louder than words.
Right. So what you're teaching them is that they can grow up and they're allowed to follow their joy and follow their passion and be happy with themselves and also love their kids if they have them.
They were raising a generation of self-lovers, people who love themselves.
And
not in a selfish way, but in an unselfish way, because the more that they love themselves, the more they'll be able to love others around them in balance.
Right.
In balance.
Right.
All over the place, being, you know, centered.
Right. And that makes a huge difference, you know, because then, like, my husband and I, we've always been really, you know, especially when I left corporate, and so that was 9 years ago now.
That's really bizarre. That's a decade.
But, and my kids have watched me progress through this stuff, and what they will tell you is that I am so much happier and I'm such a better person today because I'm so much happier than back when, you know, I was bringing home this and, you know, doing this, and, you know, and it was just a very different, but I was having migraines and all kinds of stuff.
You were depleted. You depleted yourself.
Yeah. And so, you know, I always tell people who are parents, yes, and it doesn't matter. Like, you know, we have all these cultural expectations, and we go through these swings, you know, in terms of the patterns, you know. It's like, you know, it used to be, you know, the mother is expected to stay home, and then it went all the way to women's liberation, and then it's been this battle back and forth for, like, a couple of decades on, oh, well, the kids aren't being brought up right, and, you know, and so now there are some fathers to stay home, and you know what, and I tell them, do what makes you happy. You know, I never stayed at home with my kids. My husband stayed home for 4 months with our first one. And I always work. And my whole thing was because I loved working. And I loved doing what I was doing at the time. And I said, well, so if I do that, then I have more love to give to my kids when I get home than if I was staying home because I felt like I had to. Because that was, like, what made me worthy as a mother, and that I would suck as a mother if I did it. You know, I never felt that. I always was like, if mom is happy, the kids are going to be happy, you know? So my kids say, you know, and I really have found my passion and all that kind of stuff. And now my kids are coming into adulthood, and so what do they want to do? Is they want to follow their passion. Well, that's just what we want to do, of course. So just by being me, just by loving me, just by being self-central, I'm teaching a whole generation behind me how to do it themselves.
My actions.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's like, and so this is a big shift for us, right? You know, culturally, worldwide, right? And by the way, on the other hand, if you do really love staying home with your kids, then stay home with your kids. I'm just talking about where it comes from the heart and not from obligation or because you feel like you're going to be judged if you don't, all that kind of stuff. And same thing with working. So, and then men, same thing. It was the other way. And it was funny how my husband was such an anomaly, funny enough, even in this generation, today's age, that he stayed home for a little while with the kids. And because I traveled a lot when my kids were little, he was a lot of times the one they had a call if they had an ear infection or if they were sick at school. And I remember he literally used to get seriously judged by his peers at work when our kids were little, because, well, why can't your wife take care of it? Well, because she's traveling. and it's like, and it's funny, because that's changed over the years, even in his own workplace and all that kind of stuff. And we've always been very equal and all that. But it's interesting to see that even in the mid to late 90s, there was still a lot of that. And it's really shifted, I think, a lot in the last 15 to 20 years. And yet it's still in some places still shifting. But again, yes, we're talking about parenting, but that also comes from this place of, okay, well, I'm allowed to, with men, I'm allowed to be affectionate. I'm allowed to be emotional, and I'm allowed to love nurturing my kids, and that's okay. You know, I love playing, you know, and it's funny because it's like, all right, but, you know, like, and it's funny because I've talked to so many men, and it's like, well, go play with your kids, play and do stuff that makes you happy and do something that's silly and different, and that's okay. And don't give a crap what other people think, you know?
True.
Yeah, and there's nothing, so it's just, All this stuff comes down to being self-central, being central to who we are, and honoring that from a place of love. And knowing that no matter what we choose from that space, right, that we would, that we can do only good from that space of love and joy for everybody else by not, by just by being there.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you, before we go into our little clearing for the day, what would you recommend as a takeaway for somebody to try and shift that and start working on that for themselves if they haven't already?
Rise and shine. Rise and shine.
Simple enough, right?
Listen to your body's signals. If you're thirsty, drink. Don't, you know, I'm going to say that's one of my things that I will be so involved with things. I'm still a work in progress with the water thing. And I find different ways to, as silly as that sounds, but it's recognizing it and then following through with that and finding those things that nurture you, the things that feed your soul. You know, keep, give yourself time for you. Fill yourself up first, and then you can be there for other people. So a really, really important topic. Really important topic.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And have fun along the way.
So right.
We're not having fun, we're not doing it right.
Lots of laughter. Yeah, like it's funny because my husband's one of the best people in the world for that. Like he, out of anybody, like he can literally give me a look that will send me off in fits of laughter. And it's always the right moment and it's totally unplanned and it just sort of comes. And I always tell my kids, you know, that's why Dad's been around for so long, it's because he makes me laugh. But, if it, you know, just to do that, find what makes you laugh. Find what you find funny, you know, and brings you joy. And I mean, be silly and, you know, play. Play.
Yeah.
Find a way to play, you know. All right, so what do you think should be our creation intention for today? Just the I love myself. I'm worthy.
Mm-hmm.
I remember and I'm allowed to have my joy and bliss. What do you think?
My soul is rolling on her back and thriving in joy.
I agree. I agree with her. So does that sound good? That feels good.
Sounds good.
All right. So whatever we need to do, so we fully exist and manifest from the vibration of that, those statements, and with grace and ease, and of course the joy and bliss, which is all part of it anyway. So let's go. And by the way, as I always say at the beginning, is even if you're watching the recording of this, because a lot of it's a good percentage of people do. This is outside of space and time, so you can absolutely join in. All righty. Actually, that whole thing was all very playful.
And then he's going to open mic night, too.
Well, you know, it's funny because as soon as we started, I'm sitting here, and it was literally like somebody was dragging a feather, the tip of a feather down the side of my face, and I'm like, seriously, stop it. And I just felt the laughter from there. So I saw a whole bunch of us, and we're sitting in the circle, and the center was this flame, and it was like the flame of, I think it was like the inner child, because the child's all about the play, right, and the creativity or whatever. But it was basically sort of like, and it was a very playful flame, and then all of a sudden, like, all these pieces of it just popped up and, you know, and went and melded in the hearts of everybody and just ignited their own, you know, which is already there. And then it was just all this playing and dancing and then all of that, and I was just laughing because I could hear your dog, you know, and then I could hear this, but I was like, wow, aren't we antsy today with the fairies and all? I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was going on. So that felt really good and different than usual.
Funny. Yes, it was very playful. I felt a lot of energy and excitement and expansive in the heart. And it's funny, what showed up for me was, I've seen this before, a Funyun. And that,
yes, I mean, I've heard you say that, a Funyun.
So, was saying, like, you can, it's like layers, and you can just peel it off and have fun with it instead of it being an onion and crying. Have fun with it and just peel off those layers and just keep laughing.
Strip it down, baby.
Right.
I have like this vision in my head. What a playful energy we have this morning. So, yeah, so that's everybody's, you know, homework. Go and play and have fun, enjoy, and find that. And that's where we find ourselves, centralness. I really do love that word. So, everybody, thank you for joining us. And before we go, Debbie, I want you to tell everybody where to find you if you have anything coming up. I know you're in northern New Jersey, so for anybody listening, so go ahead.
I do. I'm in northern New Jersey. I've got bi-monthly open spiritual discussion group. So come on down if you're in the New Jersey area. Would love to see you. I'm working on some or playing with some art workshops coming up. So keep you posted on that.
And your website, angelacreator.com.
Creator.com, exactly.
And that's where you can find all her stuff. And she teaches and plays and does all that kind of stuff. So
thanks.
Awesome, everybody. And thank you, Debbie, for joining me. And we'll see you next time. Yes, yes, always. So we'll see you all next time for Living the Shift.